Sometimes people like to come in and add their thoughts and theories of what should be done and how it should be done and just impose that on a community. I found that the best approach is really getting in the nitty-gritty with the community and learning from them what they think their issues are, what they think their challenges are, what they think their successes are, the areas in which they think they do well in. Then let's try to build on that, but having their buy-in on the front end.
Welcome to another episode of Advocates in Action, a podcast created by the National Patient Advocate Foundation, a nonprofit that develops initiatives promoting equitable access to affordable quality healthcare through policy, action, and partnerships. I'm your host, Ashley Freeman, and welcome to Season 8, where we get the opportunity to share with you about the journey we've been on this year for shared decision-making at critical points in a long illness journey, a project of Patient Advocate Foundation and National Patient Advocate Foundation, made possible in part by support from the Danaher Foundation. Thank you so much, Daryl, for being here with me today. I know you are one of the participants that I had the honor of meeting when we were at our Mississippi workshop, and I would love for you to open up and share with the people a little bit about you and the work that you're doing in the community.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Small town boy in Mississippi. Trying to make our state as great as I can, doing the things that I can to have the impact that I can. I just recently started a new job at the Mississippi State Department of Health. I'll be helping to lead the heart disease and stroke prevention program, both heart disease, stroke, effects of stroke, high cholesterol, things that impact our state, especially regions where there are more economically disadvantaged residents around the state. I wrote two grants for my church. Both were funded. One was to build out a health and wellness awareness program, and the other was a security program to shore up the security around the church to ward off against anything that may come against us that we may be better secured and suited to withstand it.
That's awesome. And are you originally from Mississippi, born and raised?
Yes, born and raised here in central Mississippi, the capital area, Jackson, most of my life.
I feel like when people are working in communities that they are from and understand and have been able to see the changes over time, it just means so much more. You're more connected to it because you're like, this is my home, you know? What is that bigger vision that you have for your state and for your local area?
Absolutely. It does give you more buy-in to see the place in which you've grown up your whole life and you've experienced the challenges along the way. So that greater vision that I have with the influence and the impact that I can have, however great or however small, it is to see the greater Jackson area thrive in a holistic manner. Public safety or crime being decreased, education being more available, not only there, but health-wise, to have our communities more healthy, to have them more active. Doing my part to really advance the state from just many different areas. Primary focus right now for me is health, making our states more healthy, and also bringing awareness to cancer and cancer disparities.
With those being the top health issues that you see, when you look at those different disparities, what are some of the unique challenges that you're experiencing in Mississippi?
I do work with the Fannie Lou Hamer Cancer Foundation, and that's in the Mississippi Delta. It's north of where I live, but the impact is still felt. Access to care is important, and we experience that down here in Jackson as well. And it can be, the access to care is even more granular than having a doctor or a specialist in town or in your region. Access to care really, in many cases in which I've seen, is literally having an ambulance available to transport someone who's having an adverse event at their home and just getting to the doctor. Mm. or getting to the hospital, the emergency room, whether it's in rural Hinds County, where my grandmother lives in Bolton, Mississippi. We've experienced a wait time of up to 45 minutes to an hour for an ambulance to arrive to transport them to the hospital in the event they were not able to get in a car with someone to drive them to the hospital themselves. You may have a firefighter, a fireman, or the fire rescue team come on the scene, but those challenges are really felt in the Mississippi Delta. Access to care looks like some of the hospitals closing. Emergency rooms not being open, closed down, loss of providers. So that access to care, it greatly, greatly, greatly impacts our state.
That is so frustrating because we think of 911, we think of being an emergency, and you think of immediate help, right? Every minute, every second counts because so many things can be changing. And is that tied to the fact that hospitals are so far away from each other and that's where the ambulances are coming from?
It can be tied to that, or it could be tied to not having enough ambulances to service the county or to service the area in which they are providing those ambulance services for. If there are only two ambulances in a region and those regions are 30 to 35 miles apart, if there's two events or one event that require two ambulances, if someone else has an event, it's going to take away their coverage.
And then you also mentioned hospitals closing. All of these things are tied together. What are the causes for these problems?
So if I were to put a name on the cause, and to me, it's the most low-hanging fruit, it would be the lack of having Medicaid expansion here in the state of Mississippi. If we were to expand Medicaid, it would provide additional resources to our communities. Let's have the infrastructure in place to support the sick.
What are some of the other impacts of hospitals like the Greenwood Hospital closing down? Everything has a domino effect. So what are some other things that you're seeing as an effect of all of these hospitals closing?
Greenwood LaFleur, the closure is looming. They've been rescued several times from actually closing, but in 2024, this year, it's a reality that it may be closing again if some intervention doesn't happen. Greenwood Hospital is a major employer in LaFleur County, in Greenwood, Mississippi. It is a major employer. If that hospital closes, a lot of people will be left without a job. Not just the professional staff, doctors and nurses and physical therapists. Those aren't the only people. You have support staff, people who are processing revenue claims and insurance claims and people working in the cafeteria, the custodial staff. These are everyday people who will be impacted by Greenwood LaFleur Hospital closing or any other hospital around the state that closes. It's not just the sick won't have healthcare access, it's the employees who work there as well who will be impacted, thus impacting the whole community. And then you have to factor in, if this hospital closes, if we can barely afford to get here for care and treatment, what does it look like for my family to have to travel 45 minutes to an hour, an hour and 15 minutes to 2 hours away to receive adequate health care? What strain does it put on that family unit? A great strain. So if people are struggling between care and transportation and housing and education, all of those can be a priority all in the same day. So a lot of work needs to be done continuously. A lot of work is happening. Great people around the state of Mississippi, a great sense of community, a great sense of values. Although we have our challenges, we have all the tools. I think we just need to be connected and coordinated in a way so that we can help impact each other.
And I love that you mentioned about the great sense of community and how people are working to create solutions. Because one thing I always love to highlight on the podcast is, yes, the issues that are happening, but there are people who care about these issues and are doing work. And, you know, for anyone who's listening to this who might be in a similar city or state or area, and they can learn from, you know, the different strides that you all are making in Mississippi, what are some of the top efforts or people in your community that are doing good work that comes to mind when it comes to being a part of the solution?
As it relates to effort, one thing that stands out most in my mind, in my works in the Mississippi Delta specifically, the Mississippi Delta is a connected community. Although people may not have the highest socioeconomic status, they are still people. They have common sense. And sometimes people like to come in and add their thoughts and theories of what should be done and how it should be done and just impose that on a community. That really doesn't work well. You don't get that buy-in, that level of, I want to take up this strategy and implement it everywhere I go. You don't have that, I'm going to tell my cousin, my brother, my sister, my coworker, my church member, the person I meet in line at the grocery store. You don't have that word of mouth sense of connection and community when you try to impose something or what you think is best. I found that the best approach is really getting in the nitty gritty with the community and learning from them what they think their issues are, what they think their challenges are, what they think their successes are, the areas in which they think they do well in, for the pros and cons that you come up with. Then let's try to build on that, having their buy-in on the front end. Mm-hmm. On the front end, I found that has been impactful. Working with the Fannie Lou Hamer Cancer Foundation, we received some grant funds to do some prostate cancer training cohorts around the Mississippi Delta and some surrounding counties as well. Correlated a group of men together, gave them training and heard from them what their challenges were, what keeps them from not going to the doctor, or why they go to the doctor, how many times a year do they go to the doctor, hearing from them, and then layering on that education piece to what can better impact them. I found those strategies to really be impactful.
It's basically not having that whole savior complex, right? And believing that people don't know what matters the most to them. And it's kind of like what we talk about even with our communications with our providers, right? Like, you're only at the doctor's office 2%, you know, 5% or 10% of your lifetime. But the other 90, 80% is you and your body and you going throughout your day. So when you communicate to your doctor that these certain things hurt or all of that, and you're expecting them to listen and respect that, it's the same concept when working with communities, learning from community, not coming in thinking that you're the expert. Like you said, most of the times, every time, people in the community know what the problem is, know what some potential solutions are, but sometimes it's just the infrastructure, the resources, or the money that's lacking to be able to fulfill that. So I love that you broke that down. In the season that you're in with the work that you're doing, what are your three top priorities right now?
Number one, thinking outside of the box for solutions. There are so many organizations and so many churches and so many nonprofits and so many different areas around the state who are all doing great work. I want to strategically think of ways that are unconventional to have the most impact. I'm thinking of it as like a cross-functional team hybrid situation where different organizations, where their focus may be economic development, are in a room engaging with healthcare leaders and community leaders on some shared solutions, some shared strategies that can help impact all three groups.
That is so important, and I think underutilized, because so many people work in silos and never want to come together. And what we have to realize is we're stronger together than we are separate.
We're stronger together, and it really can be fun. If you're learning something new from another population in which you've never communicated with, they're learning from you, a community they've never interacted with, and you start to synergize. Oh, and you might do that over a good meal, or you may do that, you know, in a space to where it's interactive and fun. I really believe that's where magic happens. Number two, helping increase awareness about health disparities, helping increase awareness on preventive measures to impact health. The saying goes, an ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure. So the small efforts that we can make on the front end with prevention, mm-hmm. and prevention is varied. It looks different for a lot of people. Some people, it can be a brochure. Some people, it can be a word of mouth conversation. For some people, it needs to be a training. For some people, it needs to be an activity. But however we choose to disseminate and advocate for prevention, I think it needs to be really at the forefront, because a lot of people really don't take into account that 85 to 90% of their life when they are healthy, they really don't think about it. They wake up, go about their routines, doing what they do, eating what they eat, and not thinking about that impact that it may have towards that 10 to 15% of their life. I think having efforts around prevention, however big that ounce is, so that when it's time for a cure, it won't be as large. It won't be as great, because you will know what's going on within your own body. Or if a situation arises in your family, that your family unit is aware. They know how to cope. They know what's going on. If they get a hypertension diagnosis, they know what they can do to help lower their blood pressure. If they do get a diabetes diagnosis, they do know what they can do to lower their A1C levels.
We kind of all learned that during the pandemic, right? At least for me, I remember in the beginning when they were saying, oh, people with respiratory issues or asthma, you should be extra cautious, to the point where I got so in tune with my body. I was like every day just checking to see if something felt different, absolutely, trying to take as many precautions as possible. But all those years prior, I wasn't really caring about how I felt. And you know,
you are out here just living.
Just living.
Just living.
Until something was, you know, impeding on that living. And then it's like, oh, prevention is very important. But like you said, people don't think about it during that 80% of that healthy time. So I love the way that you broke that down, because I think we all can refer to those hard early COVID times and remember, yes, how we felt about prevention in those moments.
Number three, and this is something I'm working on personally this year, not getting so bogged down with all the things that I have to do and not being active. I want to move more. I received a bike at the early part of this year. Somebody blessed
That's
me with
awesome.
A bike.
Yeah.
And I've been riding my bike more and just taking in the sights. Of course, it was cold a few weeks ago. It was cold. It started raining a few days, but I didn't let that keep me from doing something to be active. I think those are the three areas in which I can have a personal impact around the state, whether it be from my own business ventures, or if it be through my work with the Fannie Lou Hamer Cancer Foundation, or if it's through my employment with the State Department of Health.
And then the last one about being active, I think that's just you practicing what you're preaching. That's prevention in itself, staying active and being fit no matter what the weather is, no matter what's going on, you're sticking to your word.
Absolutely. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk. You can't help motivate and empower someone else if you're not motivated and empowered yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been working on this year, being more empowered myself. Of course, I still have a ways to go, but it's my endeavor every day to chip away at it, to be more active and be more preventive in my own life.
My mentors always say that leadership is spelled E-X-A-M-P-L-E, and that's exactly what you're being for your community, is that example.
Thank you for that. Yes. And that's a great line. Leadership is spelled example. I love that.
And is there anything else that you wanted to share, or any calls to action on your heart that you want the people to know?
If we're intentional about being good to ourselves and being good to others, it's almost like a stress relief when we're helping to meet the needs of someone else and we're taking care of the needs that we require as a person. So if we be good to ourselves, be good to others, we'll help in some way create a memory that'll have a lasting impact on someone else.
I'm Ashley Freeman, and thanks for listening to this episode of Advocates in Action. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. We enjoy connecting with our listeners, so please visit our website at npaf.org/podcasts for show notes, resources, and ways to engage with us on social media. Thanks for listening.